Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hot Stuff by Max Monroe. Narrated by Lydia Dornay and Nelson Hobbs. Intro. September 13th. Lauren. I grab the iPad chart from the rack next to the door and scroll through the details of my next patient, making a mental note of the pertinent details. 37-year-old male, no history of smoking or drug use, career in firefighting suggests higher risk of smoke inhalation, and lung scarring, but last physical at a previous practice, showed no signs of abnormalities, and vital signs and blood workup were unremarkable. I blip over the rest to the patient concerns, of which there are none, and then blink back to the name on the top of the file. Garrett Alexander. It doesn't ring any bells, but then again, it wouldn't. I know with his career choice it's likely he works at one of the local San Diego firehouses, but I've barely been back in town long enough to recognize what street I live on, let alone some random public servant. Quickly, I wrap the knuckles of three fingers against the teal wooden exam room door and wait for a response before entering. "Come on in," he offers cheerfully. So, I step inside without delay. "Hi, Mr. Alexander," I greet, sticking out my hand for him to shake. "I'm Dr. Lauren." "Dr. Lauren?" he prompts. "That's an unusual last name." "Huh, no, Lauren is my first name. Carol is my last." I laugh a little at my faux pas, turning to the sink to wash my hands in an effort to avoid exposing my blush. I used to work in a pediatric ward, and the tiny humans appreciated a more personal approach. Old habits die hard, I guess. I grab two paper towels from the holder next to the sink and wipe off the water droplets as I turn around. And for the first time since I walked in, the freakishly handsome nature of Mr. Alexander hits me like a wave. Good God. He's like seriously pretty. Strong jawline, clean-shaven, dark hair framing the most startlingly piercing light blue eyes. I'm actually wondering if he's one of Edward Cullen's Tanner, Southern California-based, sun-accepting relatives, because I swear, there are golden flecks of glitter embedded across the bridge of his perfectly proportional nose. Sweet bazookas. I wonder if his skin is like that everywhere. Even his balls? Odd, I know, that my brain immediately goes straight to a guy's balls, but hear me out. How many people can say they've cradled a ball sack on their first day of their new job? Okay, now tell me how many people can say they've cradled two. How about three? Seems crazy, right? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that nothing is crazy in medicine. In fact, if anyone is wondering, I myself am up to four pairs of dangling wonders on the day. And, as you can see, lucky number five is right here, sitting in front of me with his super handsome face and crazy perfect skin. Apparently, when you're the new doctor in the family practice, no matter if you came to said practice to continue working with pediatric patients like you did at your previous job, you get zero variety in your assignments. Yearly physicals for adult males of all ages are, for today, my sole bread and butter. And if you're keeping track, you'd understand that every yearly physical includes a full body check, testicular assessment included. Which means you're about to get up close and personal with Mr. Hot Stuff's real flipping soon. Goodness, I am losing it. I shake my head to clear the insane thoughts, patting the sweat off my palms onto the fabric of my white coat discreetly. "Dr. Lauren." That's cute, actually. His words pop the silence bubble before it borders on awkward. "I'm not a tiny human, as you can probably tell," he says with a grin. "Oh, yeah. That's pretty obvious." The words fall out of my mouth before I can stop them, while my eyes flit toward the way the muscles of his arms bulge beneath his white t-shirt. He chuckles softly, and I want to smack myself in the face. Get it together! the rational side of my brain shouts, suddenly at war with the irrational harlot thoughts threatening to seep into my head. Whatever you do, do not keep thinking about how attractive this man is, because that will only lead you on a disastrous path. First, his big strong biceps, then his broad chest, and before you know it, you'll be fantasizing about his freaking penis. There's practically a whole addendum to the oath as a doctor that says you don't get intimately involved with your patients. Think about where it got Izzy Stevens. Big penis, small penis, red penis, violet penis, it is not your business. And I think I'm a fan of the personal approach, Dr. Lauren. My far too attractive patient comments, pulling my focus back to, you know, my job. So, I think I'll just keep calling you that. It's friendly. I like it. A tiny grunt gives way as I attempt to speak, still sucked in tight to my poem-like ode to phallic members. So, I clear my throat and try my best to don a professional smile. You can call me whatever you'd like, Mr. Alexander. Yet, the words that come out of my mouth are the complete opposite of my face. Call me whatever you'd like? I repeat the words in my head. Sweet mother of mercy! My stupid mind has turned treasonous, and the pervy bitch is trying to take me down with her. Garrett, he corrects, and all I can do is nod. At least I try to. What I actually do is pop a glove while I'm trying to put it on and hit myself square in the forehead. Ow. Thankfully, a man of some tact, evidently, Garrett ignores my mismovement. Unfortunately, I, on the other hand, continue to mentally berate myself. What the hell is your problem? You're never clumsy and awkward or inappropriate during patient care. Ever. Now you're snapping yourself in the face with gloves like a jizz shot taking porn star? Then again, I've spent most of my time as a physician interacting with children. A certain amount of drama and flair make those visits work. Maybe all that time pretending to be a clown or a circus ringmaster or one of the Three Stooges while trying to ease my young patient's nerves just masked the fact that I didn't need to pretend at all. Whatever. The sooner I can get on with this exam, the sooner I get Garrett out of here. Then I can stop acting like a spaz and move on to my sixth encounter with cojones like none of this ever happened. So, Garrett, I emphasize while trying to convince myself I can play it cool, and he smiles, hitching up one corner of his mouth in a way that would instantly make other females think of wild, sweaty, hot sex with him. Not me, though. No way. I'm not thinking about that at all. And the only reason I look away from him and toward the wall is to make sure the wall looks sturdy. Sturdy walls are very important. Uh-huh. Sure they are. I clear my throat and try to trudge on right into the opening of my annual physical spiel. How are you doing? Any concerns or problems you're having? Something we need to be aware of? I know you're here for your yearly checkup, but really search your mind. Is there anything that hasn't been feeling right? Nope. I feel great, actually. Best I have in years. That's terrific.
I think so,
he says cheekily. And once again, I have to look away. But I can't deny the reality. Garrett Alexander is a stone-cold fox, and I haven't developed the proper coping mechanisms to deal with it. His looks are so freakishly good, it's like they're magnetic. And my eyes might as well be two ginormous hunks of metal. Well, let's get on with the exam then, I say quickly. Then you can get back to your day. And I can go back to being a normal human person.
What if I told you I'm going to go have 6 pounds of artery-clogging bacon when you're done?
A little smirk forms at the corners of his mouth.
Would you still want to let me get back to my day?
Bacon is delicious, I counter, even though I desperately want to tell him that no human should ever consume 6 pounds of any food in one sitting. I feel like he's trying to peg me as the health-toting, rule-following doctor, and
I don't want to be peggable. I am a mystery, damn it. I think your eye is twitching, he remarks, still needling me. No, it's not. Sure, it is. It makes the blue seem kind of like it's flickering. Stop, I say with a laugh. Have the bacon. See if I care. Now you're just going against your oath as a doctor. Because I told you you can have bacon? I toss back. He chuckles. Okay. He raises two hands in the air. I'll stick to one piece of bacon. Just a little taste. If your numbers are good, what you do in your personal life is your choice. And if my numbers are bad? I don't want to smile, but I do. Damn it, I do. Well, then I guess I'll have to call you and tell you to lay off the bacon. Why am I suddenly hoping my numbers are bad? He questions, and a weird, fluttering sensation takes hold of my belly. Holy hell, is he flirting with me? If he is, you probably shouldn't be enjoying it this much. I shake my head and try to divert whatever is happening right now. Don't be silly. You and I both know a career in firefighting is kind of dependent on your health. Unless you're hoping for a career change, I'm guessing you don't really want bad numbers. I guess you're right. Maybe I'm just hoping you'll call me. Mr. Alexander! Instantly, my eyes go wide. But also that fluttering sensation moves up my belly and into my chest. Shit! I'm sorry. You're right. He shakes his head, almost as if he doesn't even know what's come over him. Almost as though this is the first time he's met this raucous side of his personality. I'm sorry. That was over the line. I swear, I'm not usually like this. Truthfully, it's hard to believe that he's not always like this, given the fact that he's so good at it, but the self-deprecating shock on his face seems entirely genuine. It's fine, I assure him. Now, let's get the exam over with so you can get on your way. He nods, his face suddenly serious in a way I should appreciate. I mean, I don't want to be hit on in the middle of a medical exam, even if it's flirtatious and innocent and coming from a total babe of a man. I'm a professional lady with a serious job that I spent 7,000 years of school preparing for. I am more than my looks. I am woman. Hear me roar. So why do I feel kind of disappointed? It doesn't make any sense, but I have a schedule backed all the way up to closing time. I don't have time to have an existential crisis about the merits of my loneliness in the middle of my workday. Save it for home, Lauren. At least at home, there's wine to pair with it. In fact, years of experience have turned me into a well-oiled self-service sommelier. Seasonal depression? White wine spritzer. Hard day at work? Cabernet. Heartache? A full bottle of anything with a full body. This twisted, awkward, flirty discomfort uncertainty? Pink champagne with a curly straw. It's a weird take on science, but it's science nonetheless. All right, Mr. Alexander, I say after clearing my throat, a marked move we both recognize as a last-ditch attempt to create some distance. Frankly, it's more for me than him at this point. I'm going to go step out for a second so you can put on this gown, and then I'll be back in to do your exam. Normally, the nurses in the practice would have already done this, but today's staff proved short for demand. I'm basically the lone ranger of vitals, assessment, charting, and ball checks of patient care today. I turn for the door and twist the lever handle halfway toward the floor. A crack of slightly different light peeks in from the hallway when Garrett calls my name. Dr. Lauren? I stop and glance over my shoulder, and the apology in his eyes, well, it's way too much. He looks hideously contrite, chastised, upset. It makes it look like he thinks he's scandalized me, and frankly, the real scariness is that I don't feel scandalized at all. I can't even let him say whatever it is he's going to. Way to single-handedly sink this fun-loving appointment into the shitter, Lauren. It's okay. I emphasize instead. It's all innocent, I can tell. You have nothing to feel badly about, honestly. Just take off your clothes and we'll get this show on the road. The corner of his mouth hitches up, and I close my eyes with a laugh. You know what I mean. His good-natured, sexy laughter vibrates in my chest as I step outside the room, shut the door, and lean up against the wall beside it. I sure wish humans had a reset button. They're tiny and annoyingly inconvenient most of the time, since I always have to rifle through my junk drawer to procure an item small enough to get it in the stupid little reset buttonhole. But in this case, I'd welcome the frustration. Just a 10 or 15 second reboot that takes me back to the factory settings, to the woman who doesn't pop herself in the forehead with gloves and daydream about patient penises and make things way more awkward than they need to be. Man, I've been out of the adult patient care game too long. Girl, same goes for the sex game. That dry spell of yours is going 3 years strong with no end in sight. I ignore my snarky subconscious and glance down at my watch. A full 2 minutes have passed, and he is almost definitely undressed by now. The only thing stopping me from going in there is how uncharacteristically excited I am at the prospect. Okay, okay. Be cool. Be cool. It's just another day at the office, and Garrett is just another set of anatomy. Yeah, that's it. It's testes time, and I'm about to tell my mental DJ to pick up the beat. Boom, bada boom, ch ch. Boom, bada boom, ch ch. Back in the HUD, way out east, I did rotations with the sick urology beast. Penises, testes, urethras, and bladders. I took them to the church like a medical baddie. Suddenly, the door to Garrett's room cracks open, and he peeks his head out, damn near startling me into another dimension. Noticing my hysterical jump in defensive pose, he quiets his voice to a whisper. Sorry to, startle you. I'm ready. Of course, yeah. I nod feverishly, follow him into the room, and take a few discreet, calming breaths to slow down the rate at which my heart is sprinting inside my chest. Honestly, for a woman who did gymnastics in her childhood, you'd think my cardiovascular system would be able to tolerate adrenaline a little better than this. A minor startle from a hot fireman, and I'm panting like a dog in heat. His gown covers everything, but it's strangely anticipatory, and it feels like I'm seeing more of him than I should. It's weird and odd and completely irrational. So I shut my eyes for a brief moment and force myself into doctor mode. Just take a seat on the exam table, please. I instruct him with a gesture of my hand. He does without question. Then I start my assessment. First, his vital signs. Blood pressure, heart rate, respiratory rate, and temperature. All good. All within normal limits. Next, with my stethoscope, I listen to his heart and lungs and abdomen. Also good. Steady, strong, clear. Am I going to live to see another day, Dr. Lauren? He asks once I finish a quick reflex check, smirking up at me from his spot on the exam table, and I can't not return his expression with a grin. Yes, it appears that you will, I answer, and make a few notes in his chart. Now, if you don't mind, please stand up in front of the exam table so I can, check your, testicles. The words are damn near impossible to push out, but I manage and gesture for him to stand at the end of the exam table as I roll the stool over in front of his upright stance to take a seat. With a deep breath, I reach into the valleys of my training and rub my hands together to warm them up and avoid his eyes at all costs. Rearranging the fabric of his gown, I get ready to start. He stands quietly, but as for any other details of his position or expression or identifying details, I have no idea. I cannot look at him. Right now, the balls are their own independent entity. They have their own life, their own career, their own vacation home in Malibu, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, I say as calmly as I can manage while holding my knuckles against the fleshy globes of this fine-as-hell man's balls. I'm going to have you just turn your head to the side and cough. He turns his head, but he doesn't cough. Instead, he makes conversation, like I'm not sitting here palpating his testicles. Why is it that you have to turn your head to the side anyway? Does it do something to the tendons or expose the hernia more or something? I've never really understood the whole turn your head to the side thing. I clear my throat against the impulse to ramble profusely and keep my answer as concise as possible. Actually, it's just so you don't cough directly in my face. No medical reason. Holy shit, are you serious? All this time and I thought it revealed some major medical secrets or something. I smile, glancing from his eyes to the wall and back again, still holding his balls and willing my hand not to jerk accidentally as he chuckles. The little globes vibrate against my fingers. Oh, sweet Jesus.
Why don't you just grab him from the back or something? That'd be easier, I'd bet.
You know, I'm not sure. I just do the examination like they trained me to, so, I pause, but mentally I'm shouting, please just wait with the questions until after your balls are out of my hand.
Oh,
he says, chuckling nervously this time. It's a really strange sensation, while physically connected to his genitalia, and I have to close my eyes tight against an overwhelmingly human instinct to be embarrassed. There's no need to be embarrassed. I'm a doctor. This is just part of the job. Nothing personal, nothing sexual. My cheeks start to redden. I can feel the heat blooming in every direction, evidently impervious to my very sound pep talk. I'm a doctor, I repeat to myself, this time with grit. Ignore the very attractive patient. Ignore the fact that his impressive penis is right in front of you. Ignore everything but checking for gosh darn hernia, Lauren. When I finally get myself under control, I look up and into his bright, icy blue eyes to find him staring at me, a warm, genuinely unaffected smile on his face. There's a moment in time, a pause, that feels like the world goes still. Like in some cosmic weird way, I've been waiting for this moment for the entirety of my adult life. Suddenly, I feel calm, assured, ready to take charge of the room and the situation again and do my job, regardless of all of the awkward baubles that have added up to get us here. Okay, Mr. Alexander, whenever you're ready, go ahead and cough for me. He does, thankfully revealing a lack of hernia. And then I move my fingers to the other testes. Okay, one more time for me? No protrusions, no hernias. Thankfully, he seems fit to fight fires another day. Everything seems good, Mr. Alexander. Really, really good, my subconscious offers, and I swat her down with a mental bat. You can get dressed, and then I'll have a nurse come take you down. I start to say, but pause when I realize that's probably not a possibility. Actually, do you know where the phlebotomy lab is?
Downstairs, right?
Yeah, I answer. Normally, I'd have a nurse lead the way, but we're a little short-staffed. So, if you don't mind heading downstairs for your blood work, that would be great.
Got it. No problem.
Once the office gets your blood work back, one of the nurses will follow up with you regarding the results later this week, I explain. But since your physical looked great, I don't anticipate any issues.
Thanks, Dr. Lauren.
I nod. You're welcome. Suddenly overcome with the need to say something, I tuck my clipboard in my chest and do it. Stay safe out there. Okay, Garrett? He smiles back at me for a longer than normal moment, his eyes searching mine for something. What? I'm not sure. But eventually he responds, I will, Dr. Lauren. It's strange. I'm always concerned with patient outcomes and always hoping for the best for the people who've been in my care. But when it comes to Garrett Alexander, I inexplicably seem to care a little more. And it only took about 20 minutes to feel that way.
Once I'm out of the exam room and the door is safely shut behind me, I lean up against the wall for a brief moment, my mind tempted as hell to look at his chart again and make note of his phone number or his address. I even contemplate writing a quick message for the reception that says the patient is requested to only see Dr. Lauren Carroll for future appointments. But I don't do any of those things because that'd be crazy. With a shake of my head, I push myself off the wall and force my mind to focus on my next patient. Though, I can't deny, I spent the rest of the day replaying my appointment with him one too many times in my head.
Chapter 1, November 28th, Garrett. Hayden, come on, bud, I yell down the hall. We gotta move. The doorway to the half-bath in my townhouse pops open, and my 12-year-old son, a dashing, smile-happy, dimple-sporting mini version of me, walks out with a smile on his face. Hey, man, the poop does what the poop wants, he tells me, just as my daughter Sarah makes the mistake of walking into the freshly vacated bathroom. Oh my God, Hayden, she yells at her twin, and her dark chocolate brown hair fans out behind her with a dramatic flare. Did you eat a decaying corpse for breakfast? Ugh, you're so gross. I roll my eyes. Sarah, don't take forever in there. We're already late. It's not like I'll be able to survive in here for more than a freaking minute, she snaps back. And Hayden chimes in with his two cents. So what if we're late? He remarks. Mom doesn't want us there anyway. Yes, I contest. She does. You kids are important to both of us. Hayden rolls his eyes. Right. Hayden, you are. Save it, Dad. He tosses out over his shoulder. I'll be in the car. I heave a heavy sigh and let my head fall back on my shoulders. Divorce sure is fun sometimes. And since our divorce situation is fairly new, most days it feels like the obstacles just keep coming. I pace the kitchen while Sarah appears to have adjusted to the awful aroma of shit her brother left behind in the bathroom and takes her sweet time. After a quick glance to my watch, I realize that not only am I running late to drop off the kids to my ex-wife Bethany, but I'm also running late to the captain's house, at which I have been invited to Thanksgiving dinner. When he invited me last week, he gave me a huge spiel about San Diego's Station 18, my firehouse, being like a big family, and you didn't let your family spend Thanksgiving alone. It also didn't help that I'm only on call today for work, not scheduled. My typical 3 days on and 3 days off rotation just happened to give me Thanksgiving off this year. And truth be told, I'm kind of dreading going to my boss's house. I would have much rather spent Thanksgiving with my best friend Jake and his wife Holly and their girls. But when the captain asks, you don't say no. Especially since, after welcoming me with open arms, he told one of the other guys, right in front of me, that the real reason he was inviting me was to keep me from getting in trouble like a fucking idiot. I wanted to decline, but I couldn't. Saying no would rank right below being late on his list of offenses. I can only hope it doesn't count when I'm not on the work time clock. The door to the half-bath swings open, and Sarah saunters out like she has all the time in the fucking world. Like I'm a damn cattle rancher, I herd her through the kitchen and down the hall to the back door to try to influence her to move a little faster. Come on, baby girl, move like you're not dead. I am dead, she sasses. Long past it. As soon as you agreed to let Hay and me spend Thanksgiving with Mom and her new buck-toothed boyfriend, you killed me. I roll my eyes. By God, my daughter can do drama. I cannot even imagine what my life is going to be like when she's a full-blown teenager. On the other hand, I guess this explains the all-black wardrobe and heavy eyeliner around her midnight blue eyes. It's a metaphor for her own funeral. You're not dead. And Blake isn't buck-toothed. He's just got nice, somewhat large teeth, I hedge. Frankly, I'm Team Blake every day of the week. Having some other guy to keep Bethany distracted from trying to make my life a living hell has been a godsend to our divorce. The first few months were rough, tension-filled, but Blake has actually inserted himself.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?